Ladies and gentlemen, it's Conference USA Report Podcast, part two of the Media Days edition. And with me, as was yesterday, Mr. Aldo Avina.
As per usual, the past 2 days.
Yeah, as per usual, in the days that we're in the hotel, Omni Frisco lobby. Day two Media Days. It's always tough because if you're unfamiliar with it, the Tuesday afternoon, or is it Wednesday afternoon, is Conference USA West, right? And then early morning, Conference USA East, right? 8 a.m. And they also do like a little happy hour reception.
Wednesday night. Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible that you can have a little too much fun networking and then not be ready for the next day.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Aldo had some allergies, and you know what? I've used that excuse lots of time when I was hungover. So you were not at Media Days to talk to the coaches directly.
Not this morning, yeah. I lost my voice, so I couldn't even ask any questions.
Yeah. But I was there. You know, I was doing my job. I didn't call in sick to work. No. So decidedly more subdued event than the first day. Some of that was just the nature of the East attendees. Right. I mean, so in the West, you have, you know, Texas teams, right? San Antonio, Rice, Houston. Rice is in Houston. San Antonio's UTSA. And then all the Dallas media here for North Texas, which is good. When North Texas is good, everybody cares, right? When they're bad, nobody cares. Been a Media Days where the only guy there was the beat writer, right? And that was it. And nobody local. Today, you got 24/7 all in his face. Everybody's talking to Seth Luttrell. Today, it was kind of the other thing that not a whole lot of national media care about your Old Dominion. Lane Kiffin, for better or worse, is not the hottest story anymore. And even Butch Davis, same kind of deal. He's a famous coach, famous name, not getting a whole lot of attention, although he did get some.
I mean, it's tough when you're a Florida school like that. You know, Florida International, Florida Atlantic.
Yeah.
And being far from, as you were saying, being far from Florida, you got to travel all the way here to do a media day. Mm. You know, all of these schools coming from Virginia, Kentucky, I guess, is the closest one.
Yeah.
Maybe Middle Tennessee. It's tough to travel from way over there and get media coverage other than your own beat writer having to travel that long ways if they pay for it.
Yeah, you're not going to ship a lot of equipment so you can get TV stuff going. Anyway, so that's why the morning session was a little more subdued. And the good part is that I can sit and just chat with a couple of these guys. And as you might expect, everybody who's a head coach is engaging, can hold a conversation, and can talk a little football, right? So there's a lot of that. Guy I was impressed with was Will Healy. He was 34 years old, right?
Yeah, he turned 34 in January. He's looking at his profile the other day. And I was looking forward to talking to him. Just to see, you know, what it's like. And I was trying to remember what previous schools he stopped
Austin
at.
Austin P.
Austin P, yeah. And he's an offensive guy, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think he played quarterback at, Air Force or something.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. You didn't get to talk. Maybe it's good that you didn't get to talk to him. Because last time you were enamored of Mike Sanford. And,
yes.
You know, he went on to be let go. And so he didn't get him.
He just needed one more year.
I mean, so again, overall impressions of the whole thing. You talk to a guy that ascended to be a head coach, right? He's going to be a great interview and a great, you know, chat. And saying all the right things does not equate to good football and coaching, right? I mean, again, Mike Sanford, he looks the part, he can talk the part, right? And he's fired, right? He's not there anymore.
You know, at the same time, though, you could see the frustrations during the interviews last year with him and some of the defensive postures and comments and attitudes that he had.
Yeah. So Will Healy, impressive. Bobby Wilder. And I see Ed Miller has just entered the building. The room just fell silent. There's a hush among in the crowd. Conference USA Report podcast favorite, the Virginian Pilots' own, Mr. Ed Miller. How you doing today?
Doing well, Adam. Aldo, good to see you guys.
So what were your impressions, your media just takeaways from 2 days in Frisco?
I thought it was a pretty good turnout for media from that standpoint.
Cool.
You know, and this is a league like that struggles, you know, to get its message out, I think, a little bit because it's so spread out.
Yeah.
You don't have a central you know, there's no natural real regional construct of this league. Yeah. So, yeah, they got, and so I thought, you know, there was some national media here. And, you know, I thought overall it was pretty successful, except when they turned the power out yesterday about 30 minutes after the sessions ended. I had a little problem with that. Yeah.
Always save your work, I guess.
I saved it. Yeah, I had battery. I was just about done. It was just more the principle of the thing, you know. Yeah. I've been doing this a long time, and that's a first, you know. Like, I don't know when they think people are supposed to actually write. You interview people, you transcribe, and then you sit down and try to put together some coherent thoughts. So, you know, sometimes it takes longer than other times.
Maybe they thought you were just so amazing that you were just transcribing and writing it as you were talking to them or something. I don't know, maybe, you know.
I like to think that, but I think they just wanted to get out of there and go to the reception.
I think you're right there, too. All right, so just back to the overall impressions of the East, right? East was today, again, a little bit more subdued than yesterday. Some of that is because the attention is not on the East. A little bit's on North Texas. Also, as we said, location, right? San Antonio's down the way. You can drive up all your TV equipment and, you know, do that kind of thing. It's not so easy for your Western Kentucky to do the same. So I think favorites out East, FIU, Marshall, and a little bit FAU, kind of however you look at that. Is that how you see it, Ed?
Yeah. I mean, I think when they put a figurative gun to my head and I had to pick it, I think I went with the herd.
Yeah, this is Texas, so we got plenty of guns. We can actually do the real thing.
It's not figurative. It's literal. I think I went with the herd just based on what they have coming back. And, you know, defensively, they're usually pretty good. Yeah. And, you know, Doc Holliday's kind of got a well-established way of doing things. And, you know, there's still some questions at FAU. You know, they have a lot of moving parts and the quarterback thing. And, I didn't really get any clarity because I didn't really spend much time over there because I was kind of focused on Old Dominion today and doing a couple things. But then Butch Davis, they're always going to be right there, I think. He's established that they're going to be around, you know.
Yeah, I think one of the fun little stats that I saw, and I think I told you this about this, Aldo, was that Butch Davis has a better record, like by one win, than Lane Kiffin. Just fewer conference championships, right, and a lot less media hype. But FIU was on the cusp of making it to the title game. But like I was talking with James Morgan, they were also just one play away from not even being at that close level, right? It was an interception against Middle Tennessee that kind of won them the game, that kind of deal. Interesting, though, was it Sage Lewis? He was saying that was the best moment of his career, that play, that interception. I mean, he was like, that's better than a bowl game, which just reminds me again, Aldo, that you have your priorities misaligned, and you think everybody cares about bowl games. Nobody does.
Everybody loves bowl games.
Playing cards be damned. They gave playing cards. Did you see?
I did. I got a set for my kids. So, I like Florida International. Yeah. They're bringing back a lot of production. That's important to me.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying about Southern Miss yesterday, and they're top 10 in the nation for bringing back talent, bringing back production, and they're bringing back talent as well. You know, James Morgan is a great quarterback. He's doing really well in Butch Davis' system. Butch Davis just does well with quarterbacks like Alex Magoo.
Yeah.
Ended up in the NFL, and I like that. They're bringing back more talent than Florida Atlantic, than Marshall as well. I think Marshall is bottom 10% in bringing back. So
yeah, the funny thing about Marshall is that, like, you know, a guy gets hurt. Was it, I forget, King? I forget his first name. He gets hurt, and they say, well, okay, well, we'll just stick another guy in here, and he's going to run for 200 yards on you. Their offensive line is the strength of the team. It's kind of a plug-and-play system. Their defense is always good. They had, like, that one year, right? They won, like, three games. Everything was just crazy.
I think 2016.
But, yeah, they kind of just bounced back. I don't know about Isaiah Green. He's a young kid. Talented when he was out there. I think a lot of his ability was helped by being able to throw to a guy, Tyree, I forget his name, Brady. Yeah.
Brady.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a team sport, right? You need a thrower and a catcher, and if you don't have both of them.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, did Brady graduate?
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah, and now is the quarterback going to develop enough between last year and this year where that's where the advantage is with Morgan at FIU is he was already good. The guy at Marshall is still working on developing. You know, he was terrible pass percentage.
Yeah, now that you mention, I'm looking 56.7 That's not going to cut it in modern football. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to be at 60. 10 picks, 15 touchdowns. That's, again, it's not a great ratio. But, you know, he was young. Everybody thought Alex Thompson was going to be, you know, the next thing. And, you know, so Green, you know, that maybe he's got some upside. Certainly, you know, he's got a lot of room to grow. And I think as he goes in a long way is how Marshall will go, obviously. I mean, quarterback is the key to a lot of things.
For me, I see, like, Phil Steele ranks FAU number one. I think it's because of their schedule or something like that. I think you got to look at the quarterback, right? James Morgan, 26 touchdowns, was it 7 interceptions, something like that. Basically, stat for stat with Mason Fine. And, you know, he's a smart kid. He's using big words out there. And I was like, oh, I gotta remember my thesaurus out here. He knows how to prepare. Their team knows how to prepare. They're well-coached. They have a good defense. Maybe the run defense is not amazing, but I don't think there's any team in this league that is, you know, foolproof, right? So I like him because of that, their quarterback, right? FAU and Marshall, they have quarterback questions, right? And I think you need a quarterback that can beat a good defense sometimes. And, again, not to knock these guys, but that's the question in front of them, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Isaiah Green, can you develop and be great? Hey, you know, Robeson or the transfer guy at FAU, can you guys step in and handle the business that needs to be handled?
Yeah, if you want quarterback questions, come on over to our side of the conference in Virginia. Old Dominion, you know, Blake LaRussa took a different path. He is in divinity school. Yeah. So, hey, God bless him. Good for that. Good for him. But, you know, it left him in a little bit of a pinch. So they've got two JUCOs. Messiah DeWeaver, who started his career at Michigan State, was very highly recruited. Ended up at Last Chance U, or at least a team that was on Last Chance U 1 year, East Mississippi. And then Stone Smart, who's on the all-name team already. He's from California, was California Offensive Player of the Year in junior college. And let's not forget Stephen Williams, who was anointed as the guy 2 years ago, as 17 years old.
That's crazy.
Freshman, true freshman, obviously, started. Came out last year, couldn't really hit the broadside of a barn. And it turns out he had a shoulder issue that he had surgery for. So in fairness, he's back too. Although Bobby Wilder said today, we might use him some at receiver, which is, you know, to me it was really a loaded thing. I mean, that's like, okay, he's going to play. He's not going to play receiver, but expect, you know, they want to get him on the field somehow. So if it's Smart or DeWeaver, you know, hey, let's get Stephen Williams out there. And then there's the odd trick play where you got a guy that was one of the best arms on the team, if not the best, and played quarterback in some really big games.
Yeah.
So they've got major question marks at quarterback. They think that between those three guys, we'll be able to sort something out. And whoever it is going to have to be able to run, because that's the running game has really been subpar the last couple years. And the last time they really ran the ball effectively was 2016. When they had David Washington, who was just a phenomenal, like, Cordell Stewart slash type guy from way back in the day. Runner, thrower. Talk about touchdown interception. I think he threw like 30 that year with like 4 picks. So was the offense, and they haven't had. You know, LaRussa was good at what he did. He wasn't very mobile, not very big, but yet, nevertheless, he threw for 3,000-ish yards. I think I might have right in front of me, but around 3,000
plus against Virginia.
He threw for 495, so he was a nickel away from 500 on the Hokies. And but he threw a lot of fade routes to those big receivers on the edge.
Yeah,
he could just throw the ball up, and they could go get it. So
I mean, and you know, we're talking about like ways to win games. Was it yesterday? We're talking about bell cow running backs and whatever. Aldo, I mean, again, if you got receivers that are bigger and stronger and faster than everybody, throw them the ball, right? Throw it where they can get it. Nobody else can. Was it Bobby used the 12-man football? We're gonna play 12-man football.
I didn't hear that one.
I heard him say that. I didn't understand what that meant.
I must have been talking to someone else at that point, but. I know they have. I was looking at this last night. I was trying to do a little research before I went over there this morning, and I counted up all the new players and the number of like career games they brought, and it's like 38 or seasons. I'm sorry, 38 seasons of football between the newcomers, the JUCOs, and the transfers they have. So all in all, he said they have 48. New faces on the team, which is like, that's, you know, on a 105 man roster, it's about half.
So from your perspective, right? I mean, you've been following, covering the team for a while. I mean, is that a stark change from their recruiting philosophy there? I mean,
Sure. I mean, they had built the previous team the old-fashioned way. You know, they got guys, they redshirted them. This class that just graduated had a lot of fifth years, and there were 22 seniors. So, you know, in a lot of ways, that was the year they were aiming for to do well, and obviously they didn't. So this year, they needed help immediately, and they went out and got, you know, junior college is also always a roll of the dice. I mean, you just never know kind of what you're going to get for various reasons. You know, guys are usually there for a reason. Sometimes it's academic. Sometimes they're just not quite good enough. They want to get better. And they've had mixed results with junior college guys. If they can get a few guys who can help in this group, obviously that would be a big plus. And then the transfers, they got a couple guys from Virginia Tech, a wide receiver who they really need help with that position. They lost Duhart, Fulgham, and Isaiah Harper. And they got a tight end as well who can catch the ball. So that's the thing. If you've got a quarterback right now, they don't have a lot of guys that are obvious targets to throw to.
And that kind of brings up a good question. You know, when you talk about, you know, roster turnover and trying to maintain a good team, you know, you've got Southern Miss, where I was surprised when Coach Hobson said that they don't even have a full roster. They were 12 under the total scholarships. They're at 68 scholarships, and yet we're talking about them being the number one team in the West, or at least I am.
Do they know they're in FBS? I mean, because you can only, in FCS you get what, 63. So I mean, go ahead, Coach, use all 85 if you can. I mean, I would, if I was a consultant, that would be my advice.
Use the yeah. Well, I think he was saying that he was trying to build back up to that point. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a big, like you said, roll of the dice, right? You hear like Rice, like Blomgren was talking about how that one reason they want to get freshmen in there and play and so they can build the culture, right? You get a bunch of JUCO guys in, you're kind of risking that culture thing. That's what I was wondering about, like that market change in Bobby Wilder's like recruiting philosophy.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's just, yeah, I mean, I'll say there's a little bit of desperation there. I mean, they've got to turn this thing around. You know, yeah. Three of the last 4 years, they've lost. Last year, 4 wins. Before that, 5. So, yeah, there's a little pressure there. And I think part of that is we got to win now, man.
There's a new stadium.
Yeah, new stadium. And that'll, you know, that'll keep the fans happy for a while, shiny new stadium. But, you know, you got to win. That's just the way it is. And, yeah, the culture thing is huge because you got guys coming. They're grown men to a degree when they come in. You know, they're not wide-eyed freshmen coming in out of high school, and they're guys that have played a little ball. Most of these guys are from California. They're coming all the way across the country to the East Coast. Other guys coming from, you know, so they got different cultures, different kinds of guys all trying to come together. I was talking to Isaac Weaver about that and Lawrence Garner because they're the captains, and Lawrence said he always tries to reach out to the new guys, and in fact he said when he was a freshman really nobody took him under his wing, and he was distraught, like he wanted to leave. He happened to be hurt, so he wasn't really a part of the team, but he said he'd go down to this one part of campus every day and call his mother for an hour, and she kind of talked him off the ledge and said, I'm not coming to pick you up, you got to stay. So now he's happy that he did, but he's trying to reach out to everybody, and including the JUCO guys, you know, and they seem to have appreciated it because, you know, those guys are coming in, and again, you know, it's all new to them. Like, they don't even know, you know, where to go in that area and, you know, down to the beach, Virginia Beach. He said they've got – scooters are a big thing in town now. This company's –
everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere in any city. And so Lawrence said they've got a scooter crew. It's like 5 of them just rolling around at any given time, so – it's a good way to bond. Yeah, I'm not sure I'd want my guys riding scooters. I mean, it seems like there could be accidents there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just sounds like it's definitely hot seat time.
Yeah.
It's a make or break year, and he's doing what he can to make it.
I mean, yeah, I was gonna say, I think, you know, like you've indicated before that he probably is. Has one of the more secure, like slow warming seats of the 14 teams, and I mean, you know, I think eventually somebody's going to say, "Well, we got the new stadium, now we need some more wins, or maybe we need a new change." Like, you know, that was a good chapter there, Bobby. Time to close it. I mean, what's your gut take on that?
I mean, I think it's warm, like you said, warm, but not maybe not hot would be correct. And from people I've talked to, they want to see improvement. They want to see hope for the future. It's not, hey, we got to go to a bowl this year. It's like, we need to feel like this is moving forward in the right direction. Yeah. And that's kind of a vague way to put it, but that's, I guess you can, you know it when you see it, you know. So, and really they don't have, they might have a half dozen, well, not, you know, even with the transfers, maybe 10 seniors. So, as opposed to last year, they had 22. Yeah. So, I mean, and having said all that, you know, if they go 2-10, you know, I think it's a problem. Or, you know, 3-9, I think that's a problem.
And I think some of it is the way you lose, right? I do believe that wins and losses aren't everything, right? I mean, like we said before, sometimes it's the bounce of a ball, right? I think beating Virginia Tech is a good win. So if you're going to go 3-9, but you beat Virginia Tech, that's a good 3-9, right? People are going to remember that more than they're going to remember the final record of the team. I was talking to Will Healy a little bit, and he was talking a little bit about the, like the challenges of going from FCS, right, for like a Charlotte team. Sometimes, you know, the program is putting a lot on the coach, and you know, he gave a lot of credit to Brad Lambert and said he did a great job. You know, it was. He was signing up for an FCS job, and then they said, by the way, it's going to be FBS now, you know, so make it happen. Mm. And, I mean, you know, that those are tough breaks, and I think Bobby Walters had to do a lot with not a whole lot of resources with him.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a lot of parallels there, yeah, because Bobby started the program from scratch, FCS. They had great success.
Yeah.
And then he took them up, you know, he took them up to the next level, and you know, it's been at that 10-win season, I think.
Accelerate expectations.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Yeah, I mean, I it was, you know, 10 wins is 10 wins, but a lot of things went well, and they weren't that far from, you know, probably 6 wins. But 10-3 looks great, and all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, this is easy. We can go to a bowl every year. Let's win 8, 9, 10 games. It's not that easy. So, it's tough. Anybody know where Brad Lambert wound up?
Is it Marshall? Yeah.
That is, you know, I should have known that, but he was a guy that Old Dominion really would have wanted to hire as OC, because I think he and Bobby, or no, DC, defense coordinator, I'm sorry, he and Bobby are tight, and I don't know if it was a money thing or what, but they ended up getting another guy, and for a fairly discounted rate, paying like 200, it's in the 200s, maybe 250.
No, that's, that was another thing, and like Lane Kiffin hinted at this, I was talking to him earlier. You know, somebody asked him, like, what's the biggest challenge of this level? And he said that the level of turnover at the coach and the staff level. And I think one thing we probably don't make note of all the time when we're reporting, like, salaries and stuff. We're like, oh, you know, Seth Luttrell makes 1.5 and so-and-so makes, you know, 1 million. It's the rest of the staff, right? Because, you know, those guys are making 200 grand, and so they can get a job and make 400 grand. That's double. You know, that's life-changing money there for some of these guys, especially, you know what I mean? Especially, like, the younger guys with, you know, growing families kind of deal. So, you know, everybody's having to restock their roster there. Pretty much every team has at least one new coordinator, I believe, just by my
nearly so, yeah. I think you're right.
I mean, all the way from North Texas, right, which is replacing their offensive coordinator to, you know, like you said, to Marshall, getting a new DC, and it's like the nature of the beast there. And when we're talking about like salaries and things, I think maybe we point to that kind of thing. There's turnover there, and that has an effect, I think, on the players, right? These are guys that recruited them and stuff. There's always going to be staff turnover, right? But more often in a place like this.
Well, and I think it goes back to last year, because last year I had written about how Conference USA was bringing in these quality coaches like Butch Davis and Bloomgren and Dimmel, and they were bringing in, you know, P5 staff over as well. And when you get those quality coaches in Conference USA all of a sudden becomes really fun. You know, these prolific offenses or really these elite defenses, and then they get these coordinators get picked up by these other P5 teams.
That's a good coach you have there. Mind if I take him? That kind of deal.
Exactly, exactly.
So other impressions, like I said, Will Healy was real interesting to talk to. But again, there's not much insight you can get there. You get, wow, it's everybody's been great to me. I'm excited to do this job. You know, it's a lot of hope for. I thought the more interesting things were talking to Dimmel and to Bloomgren, because they've been a year in it, right? And like, okay, Ten.
How does it look after year one? Yeah.
Yeah, same thing with Helton. I mean, he said he's leaning on his dad and his brother. They're both coaches, reached out to some of the other Conference USA guys. Will Healy said he felt embraced by everybody. I think Bobby Wilder kind of made some jokes about him. So this is the only guy that looks like he can actually still play, right? And I think Healy said, yeah, I think Latrell probably thinks he can play, but, whenever. Yeah. I was asking, when do they get around and talk? He said a little bit yesterday and a couple times in the spring or something like that.
Oh, so, the coaches?
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering about that.
I know Bobby's, I think his best buddies in the league were Skip Holtz. I know they're fairly tight. And obviously, like I said, Lambert, he's a guy that he was close to, but... And the new guy at the former guy at Western Kentucky,
Mike Sanford.
He's there for a week, a couple weeks. Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Your best bud, Aldo.
The young guy. Good suit. Yeah. Well, the all-dress team is, another. That's a good thing to be on, too.
So, like I said, Butch Davis is kind of established. I don't think he can fail there, right? Because if he loses, he just retires, right? You know, I mean, nothing. Yeah. There's no losing there. Lane Kiffin, a little bit. He has more to lose, I think. But I thought what was interesting about him and there was no crowd around him, right? The crowd that was around Seth Luttrell a couple years ago was around Lane Kiffin, and I think there was some media there, just. Asking Lane to do a little dance, like, hey, say something crazy, Now it was just kind of chill. He was just by himself, nothing there.
That's interesting. Yeah, 2 years. I mean, when he came in here, he was a rock star.
Yeah,
and for good reason. I mean, it was Lane Kiffin.
Yeah.
At FAU, all places, and it's. I don't know if it's been humbled. I don't know if that's the right word, but they're going
to
be there. I didn't really spend much time around them. I don't know what, if anything, they said about the quarterback situation there.
He said kind of standard stuff. They're going to look at it, got to get better one day at a time, that kind of thing. I mean, for whatever we want to say about Lane Kiffin, I think he's a good coach, right? He's won.
Oh, yeah.
He's won with controversy, though. And I think as he ages and kind of mellows out a little bit, we're going to just see more of the winning, right? And I think that's probably good for college football. And, you get a little redemption story out of it, whatever.
Yeah, brilliant play caller.
Yeah.
Excellent internet troll. I think he's got some skills there.
Yeah.
But, and I think it's good for the league if he's around, honestly. Yeah.
But the funny thing is that he's such a low talker. Like, he was whispering right here.
Oh, barely hear him sometimes. Yeah.
And, I just think that's interesting. Butch Davis and Skip Holtz are loud, and they're kind of talking. And, it's just funny to see. I don't want to say controversial, but the guy that ends up being controversial, he's the quietest guy. Just whispering.
Yeah, but Skip and Bobby Wilder have that in common. They project their voice. They speak in complete sentences. If they know you, they'll use your name.
Yeah.
Bobby's very, I have no complaint, he's a very quotable guy. He's good to work with.
So, other impressions of the East, who else is there? I think Doc Holliday is pretty, he looks like he gives you a withering stare whether he likes you or not. I was talking to a couple of players, and they said the same thing. I was joking. I was like, I always feel like maybe my shirt's not buttoned right or something like that. And I think the Jackson kid said, he's always kind of doing the same kind of deal.
You're not his Huckleberry.
Okay, in that regard, I've got a... It's an embarrassing story for me, but I'll tell it anyway. So I show up yesterday, and I think I had just thrown my credential on or something, and I had been back at the hotel and changed my shirt, I think. So I come out here, and I'm talking to Judy McLeod, saying hello. And she's kind of staring at my neck, and I'm like, what? And she's like, do you mind if I fix your collar? And I said, no, Judy, go ahead. I really appreciate that. Yeah. So a little embarrassing, but the commissioner was nice enough to do that. And
at least she didn't just make fun of you, right? She kind of helped you out.
She helped me out, and I said, I really appreciate that. She's like, well, I want you to promise you'll do the same for me. And I said, Judy, you're pulled together, much more than I am.
Yeah.
But so it's that kind of league, I saw as I was walking over here from where the media day was held. There's the staff of the conference.
The Baylor Scott and White Performance.
Baylor Scott and White Performance Center. Yeah. There's the staff of the conference, including Merton Hanks, former NFL player, in his shorts, T-shirt. They're all breaking down the stuff. They're carrying the stuff out to their cars. I mean, they're not outsourced. You know, this is a... It's the mom and pop is not the right word, but it's a small, close-knit group. Yeah. You know, I don't think the ACC people are necessarily doing that. Yeah, I think they've got people that... They got people.
They got people
to do. And the SEC, they got... A lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. They got people who get people to do the people's job. Yeah.
No, I didn't see Judy carrying anything out, but, you know.
I didn't see her today. She was not there
today. I saw her earlier. Yeah, I didn't speak to her. I wrote something today. I don't know if she wanted to speak. I mean, it wasn't highly critical or anything, but you never know how you're going to be received. Yeah. So, you know, I always make sure I show up so they can tell me if they don't like it, you know, one way or the other.
I guess just overall, because, you know, you were here for 2 days. I know today you kind of mostly focused on Old Dominion. What are just immediate impressions of the progress of the league, I guess, you know, since the first time you started covering them till now? Is it trending upward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going right. The only, you know, and this is often a topic, when are they going to get the breakout team and get to the, you know, New Year's Six Bowl? I mean, and the counterpoint to that is, well, we're really balanced. We beat each other up.
Yeah.
And hey, they're, you know, and as I said, they hung their hat, you know, figuratively on that trophy, the bowl challenge cup. When you walked in, that was the first thing you saw. And, you know, they're justifiably so. I mean, that's, you know, 4-2 was a good mark. And, you play other, you know, like teams of similar circumstances for the most part. But, you know, hey, the ACC, the Big Ten, the SEC have all won that. And I guarantee you, in the years they won it, I know covering the ACC for years, they used to always crow about that. Look at our bowl record, you know. And so, hey. But, yeah, there hasn't been that one great team, and I'm not sure, you know, I don't see one this year. I mean, I don't.
No, like, the FAU a couple years ago was, like, that great team. But... they didn't do good in the non-conference, right? They beat up Conference USA. What are the main games, right? There's, like, FAU opens up against Ohio State. That's not really moving the needle. Yeah. I think North Texas plays Cal. That's a kind of a name win, but, I mean, honestly, Cal is not USC, right? They're not Stanford. They're not the top of the Pac-12. And I think in a lot of ways, like, the win against Arkansas was great, and I think it's necessary because a good North Texas team should beat a very bad Arkansas team. But, I mean, Arkansas is not the cream of the SEC.
Yeah, right? And they'll say, oh, it was Arkansas. And, you know, in years past, we had Western Kentucky, we had Middle Tennessee doing that for us. Florida Atlantic, you know, to a certain extent, like you said, you know, the first year with Lane Kiffin, that was helpful, and with Devin Singletary getting NFL attention. But yeah, this year, you know, there's not really a team like that is prominent. And I think for a team like North Texas, who's playing Houston, I don't know who else, if Houston's playing any other Conference USA teams, that's the conversation. Is Conference USA good enough to beat a team like Houston just within the G5?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be critical of, like, say, Leseth Luttrell, some of these other guys, I think you have to pull off some wins where you're a 45%. You know, it's like the chances of winning are like 45%, right? It's close enough that you can win, but not you're not such an underdog that it is a miracle, right? I mean, like, I think some of those games you got to pull them out, right? That's the coaching. That, you know what, on paper, man for man, but you know what, we made something happen, got to win. And I'm also of the mind, this is what I said yesterday, I think, just sipping a beer and saying this. And I've said this on the podcast, I think. Winning games in September and October is more important than winning games in December, like the bowl games. Because honestly, I quiz you guys right now, who won the Cure Bowl? Like, nobody knows, right? Who even was in the Cure Bowl? Nobody knows. But I tell you, more people remember, like, nobody knows that North Texas got walloped by Utah State, right? But they do remember that North Texas beat Arkansas, right? So what is more important? People do remember that Old Dominion upset Virginia Tech, but they couldn't tell you that they ended the season losing to whatever. I barely even remember who they lost to at the end of the season.
That was Rice.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so, like, I contend, yes, everybody on the message board could tell you, you know, stat for stat, what happened in every game. Cool. But the casual people who have a lot more money, right, just, you know, as a whole, they care about what is happening. Hey, start of football season. What's going on? Hey, look, Houston jumped up and beat Oklahoma to start the season. Isn't that crazy? And then you kind of forget about that, right? Tom Herman ended up getting a new job. Nobody remembers that they lost the Navy and they kind of, you know, petered out towards the end. It's more when you have that conversation now, and I've had it with some casuals. It's like, hey, didn't they beat Oklahoma, right? Houston, they were doing pretty good there for a while, right? And that's it. So that to me, that those games are more important, right? Beating a Cal for like Western Kentucky, beating Louisville, those are the important games. Not so much the bowl games, but yes, if you have a 4-2 record in the bowl game, advertise it, show off the trophy, take pictures with it. Yes, but yeah, if you really want to move up in the mythical league rankings, the ranking of leagues, you got to win those non-conference games, those beatable ones. You're not going to beat Alabama, but can you beat? You should probably beat Vanderbilt, or at least not get blown out by them, right? You should Louisville, especially a down Louisville that doesn't have a defense and whose coach is on the way out. Mm-hmm. You got to beat them, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You mentioned Virginia Tech. That was the ultimate. I mean, the 1.8% chance was what the ESPN Power Index gave them. They got as much mileage out of that as they possibly could.
Yeah.
They got an ESPY nomination yeah. for best upset.
Yeah.
I mean, so they got a lot of social media impressions. I mean, it was just that kind of exposure that money can't buy. They didn't follow up on it, but people still do remember that for sure. Yeah. And they've got Virginia Tech again, and you guarantee that Virginia Tech remembers it too in Blacksburg.
Yeah.
For them, the non-conference game, they open at Norfolk State, which is a local FCS school, and you know that's if they don't win that, then that's yeah. our first sign. There's major problems.
Well, that's a christen the stadium with a win.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I mean, the swing game in that regard, East Carolina, which is a kind of a bad AAC team. Yeah. I mean, and a team they really should have beaten last year.
Yeah.
Down there, they get them at home.
Reffing controversy.
Yeah, I mean, they get them at home, and if they could somehow get that, they'll come through likely 2-2. Because, you know, assuming they're going to beat Norfolk State and lose at Virginia Tech and at Virginia, which, you know, most people would expect. If you're going to the conference play 2-2, okay, we got a shot. Somehow can we find 4 wins on the schedule? And can we get to 6? You know, you got Charlotte, you've got home games, Western at home. You know, there's some winnable games. They got to maybe get one on the road. But
they host UTSA? Is that what that says for here?
Yes, they do. So there's one, you know, maybe that looms as somewhat winnable. They're all winnable, but, you know, there's some are more winnable than others.
Yeah.
Yeah, Western at home. At Marshall, that's tough. At UAB, that's tough. At FIU, again, tough. At Middle, they've just never done well at Middle, no matter how Middle is. If there's a stock still in the stadium, they tend to lose.
That was another thing. Like it was Sage Lewis, the FIU kid, he was saying the same thing. He was saying that his greatest moment in college football was beating Middle Tennessee. It's like for some reason, we just couldn't get over the hump against Middle Tennessee. And a lot of teams say that for whatever reason. And, you know, Middle's been good, and you know, Stockstill's been good.
I think if we take a step back, you know, we can talk about how
I won't step back, but
talk about, you know, we can talk all day about the parity of the league.
Yeah.
We are a top-heavy league, but at any moment you can have an ODU upset in North Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of also speaks to the quality of the league overall against other leagues.
Yeah.
You know, a North Texas team can beat SMU, but outside of Dallas, nobody cares about SMU. Can it beat a team like Houston?
Yeah.
And how good is it against these other bowl teams, which 4-2 is great, but who are these teams that we're playing?
So yeah.
The tie-ins for Conference USA aren't great because it's Conference USA. How can Conference USA get better? And that's having those teams, that top-tier teams that can compete against these P5 teams. You know, forget about Houston. Let's try to beat Cal. Let's try to beat Mississippi State or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're just not there yet. And I don't know.
For North Texas, right, you play the New Orleans Bowl against Troy. That was a good team, but they're not leaps and bounds better. Right? Again, it's Troy.
Right, right.
It's not, you're not playing LSU, right?
The talent shouldn't be that much more disparate.
And then they got handled. They got very much handled by Troy. Same deal with Utah State. Again, not a team that is leaps and bounds. That's one of those games you're like, well, you got a good quarterback, you got a fighting chance. Instead, a blowout on national TV, right? And then Army, that was a little bit more forgivable because North Texas was kind of, they shouldn't have been there, right? Kind of like 5 wins, we're just really happy to be here. Mm. You had already beat Army. That was kind of weird. If there's a forgivable bowl loss, my point here is saying that there are some bad losses in these bowl games, right? For like especially North Texas, the good teams getting out there and getting whooped. Middle Tennessee, they lost their bowl game, right? To like Arkansas State or somebody. I forget their final bowl appearance, but kind of a fizzle out, right? Some of these wins are kind of again mid tier against mid tier. Our best teams, who are they playing, right? The league's best teams. Who are they playing? Are they beating them? And I always say this all the time, and I think there was some Western Kentucky fans getting on me. They're like, we're tired of carrying the league. You know, I was like, whatever. It doesn't matter. Whoever's the best team, so we'll say right now, well, the best teams, FIU, North Texas, UAB, USM. You don't like that?
Not UAB.
But like Marshall. So you look at their non-conference schedules and say, you got to give one of these teams a good game, right? You got to go out there and, I mean, again, are you going to beat, are you going to blow out A&M for like UAB? I think they played them last year. No. But you can't get blown out. You can give them a good fight. I think the one team that did a good job of doing that, of losing well, was UTSA. They got a lot of run off of saying, look at us, got here giving Oklahoma State a run, right?
La Tech did it too.
Yeah, La Tech, well, they played Arkansas, right? Lost 22-21. And South Carolina.
That was a couple years ago. Yeah. Was it Auburn or LSU?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. They're like, we don't like any moral victories. But then you talk to the ticket salesman guy, and he says, hey, you know, we only lost to Arkansas by that point. You know, the truth is, pretty losses, nice losses. I remember for like North Texas, that one against Georgia, right? The one who was 21-21 at halftime. They made so much. They got so much out of that, and it ended up being a blowout loss, right? It was like
in the last quarter,
Georgia had like 800 yards or something like that. But hey, at halftime, it was 21-21. You know, and that's how you sell. That's how you improve. In my mind, I think you can sell that to recruits for everybody that has a stake in the league, right? From the beat writer, the casual fan, to the actual guy that's has a bonus line that says if you increase ticket sales by X amount, right?
Yeah, at the national level, you got to get attention somehow.
Yeah,
and that's not by getting blown out by Troy.
Yeah, you don't build a following by getting your behind handed to you. I don't think. No. Maybe unless you're the Washington Generals, they've actually done that.
That was their brand, yeah. But generally, not a good thing to do. Yeah.
Anything else we want to say about the rest of the league? Aldo, do you have anybody?
So you know, like I said, I think Florida International is going to be up there as my number one, and then Marshall and Florida Atlantic. After that, it's kind of a tough sell for any of these teams. I think because of the state of losing coaches and losing quarterbacks, I'm going to go with Charlotte because it's going to surprise everybody.
They were 5-7 last year. They had a good team.
Yeah, good defense.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to, I think they have a little bit of that unknown factor. You can't just know what they're going to play like.
And I think they can surprise some teams. Yeah. And Western Kentucky is bringing back a lot of people. Have a chance to beat some teams. Middle Tennessee, I mean, I like Ty Lee. He's got a great playmaker, wide receiver. But, you know, you lost stock still. What are they going to bring there? It is an air raid offense, so you can. It's kind of a plug and chug kind of system.
Except they haven't been able to. Anytime kid stock still got injured,
it's been terrible. So we'll see if they've got the playmakers there. But I'm gonna lean on Charlotte to be more of a middle tier kind of team, kind of pushing.
Like they were last year, right? They were the surprising team that was middle of the pack, 5-7.
And I think they can go to a bowl game this year.
Yeah, a bowl game.
Yeah, bowl games are important. I'm telling you.
All right, so do you have unofficial July ranking where it doesn't matter and the scores don't change because there are no scores?
We're talking about the East.
Yeah, let's rank the East right here.
Yeah, I think the way I had it, I had Marshall, FAU, FIU. I'm losing track here. Probably middle. I think I gave Old Dominion a little bit of like a hometown discount, had them fifth. They were picked sixth. I see Phil Steele picks them fifth, so maybe, you know, Phil and I are on the same page.
There you go.
And then, Charlotte kind of default, you know, they're just, you kind of pick them last, but I think they could be better. And Western, it's kind of a mystery. I know they had talent and, you know, a new coach. I mean, who knows? So, middle, I mean, and the two South Florida schools, you know, I think either one of them wouldn't shock me if they were able to jump up there. Because FIU's got the quarterback, FAU's got the guru, you know, offensive play caller and some of the swag, and they also have a quarterback or two, you know, sitting in the wings.
I think if FAU showed us anything, is like having a lot of talent, put in the right positions, can do, you know, set records. That's what Lane Kiffin did. He put a lot of talent to guys that had been like Partridge, right, stacked up, and then all of a sudden he unleashed them, and nobody could stop them.
Well, yeah, and having a, you know, you don't have to have great playmakers when you have an offensive guru, like Ed was saying. You know, they put their tight end in great situations to just beat guys and beat just wide open without having to do any that much work. He's just open because of the play calling. And then Robeson, you know, he had some struggles, some accuracy issues, but he's a great playmaker. He moves the ball around, and he's got a great arm. It's just the accuracy wasn't there. So
but I thought he made freshman mistakes, right?
And he did, yeah.
I don't think you can blame a guy for that. They were in a lot of games that I think they win if they just had a senior guy there, right?
Right, exactly. Because they had the talent at the running back position, and they're always, you know, he lost the two best backs, but he's always bringing in good offensive playmakers then.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, he said we're not going to be able to replace, you know, one of the best running backs in school
in the
history.
Nation.
Yeah, and in college football history, maybe. But you try to replace some of the production, right?
So
yeah. I agree. Like I said, I believe in FIU. Maybe that's a bit unsubstantiated, because I think let's be honest, when it came down to it, and say, well, you guys need to win a game. They lost it, right? Lose to Marshall. They haven't beat FAU. You know what I mean? Like, those are the games. They can win games that there's no pressure on, right? When the lights are on, it's like, okay, FIU, I'm going to tune in for this game. And then they kind of drop the ball. They got to change that. They got to make that jump. I certainly think it's possible, right? Some of that just about growth. Marshall, again, quarterback situation. Do they have a quarterback that can win them some games? When they dropped, when Green got hurt and it was Thompson time, then they were a different team, right? And that's how it works sometimes. And that's the same kind of thing that helped, like, Louisiana Tech. Talented team, but then the quarterback play. You can't throw 57%. You can't turn the ball over. You can't be fumble prone. So same deal there. Middle Tennessee, quarterback questions. They have the coach. They always have people in the right spot. But, you know, I think that it's kind of a rebuilding or reloading year, whatever you want to call it. And then finally, like, Old Dominion, Western Kentucky, Charlotte, they can finish in any order, and I would be unsurprised by that. Yeah,
I totally agree. Anywhere from 5 to 7, you know, wouldn't surprise me. You can just kind of put them in a bag and mix them up. I'm going to miss some of those guys in the East. Motor Singletary, I'm going to miss seeing him out there.
Yeah,
you know, just some of the higher-profile players in the league. Hopefully new guys will step up. We got Mason Fine.
Yeah.
Not quotable, but he's watchable.
Well, I mean, if your quote is like something that just kind of a generic motivational quote, take it one day at a time, work hard.
You know, that's not really very good. Yeah. But, you know, hey, you can't excel at everything. I'm sure he could be better if he was motivated to do it. But
Some of that, I think, is like the coach that he works under.
Right.
Like, both he and Graham Harrell were both. I mean, as Graham Harrell was kind of the face of a program for 4 years, 5 years under Mike Leach, where Mike Leach was saying the outlandish things, and Graham Harrell, son of a coach, was going to just kind of say, yeah, we know we're trying to work or whatever. So, I mean, you know, like, it's kind of expected. You know.
You got to take it one interview at a time.
I just take one interview at a time, one question at a time. all right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the Conference USA Report podcast. Thanks again to Ed, friend of the show, favorite of the fans of this listenership.
Thanks. I'm glad I was able to do this in person instead of over a shaky cell phone line that I usually use.
I always imagine Ed just kind of like on a sailboat somewhere, just calling in. It's like, oh, yeah, that was a tough game. And, you know, just sipping a drink.
I'd like to imagine that, too. But the reality is a little more, not quite as picturesque as that.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we'll do it again when we do it again. Thanks for listening. Aldo, are you still on?
No, same time, same place. Yeah.